welcome to Horrorspiria. My name is May.
And my name is Clinton. I'm still on quarantine, but I'm not quarantine Clint this week.
You're quarantine Clint every week.
Okay, you, I guess.
You came into my house today wearing a mask.
That's true. That is even more quarantine than last time.
Yeah, last time I was just like, infect me. Yeah. No. Yeah, so we're coming still quarantined. Mm-hmm. We're probably going to be quarantined for the inevitable future because we believe in science. Mm. And I actually don't think DC has plans to reopen right now.
Really? I saw something that was like, every state is partially reopened. And I can still get bubble tea, as you know. So,
but we've been able to get bubble tea for weeks.
Yeah,
bubble
tea is essential, you know what? Apparently. I have to go to Virginia for bubble tea, come to think of it.
Virginia doesn't care.
They don't.
Though
I don't know. Basically, I don't know if DC is open or not open.
I think the last thing I read, which was actually a few days ago, was that the mayor wanted to reopen on June 8th or something.
Yeah.
Virginia, right now it is May 20th. Wow. It's May 20th. I'm more shocked I remember that. It's May 20th. And Virginia, the state, is open except Northern Virginia. And I live in Northern Virginia, so we have until May 29th. But I mean, honestly,
9 more days.
I mean, nothing. I'm not changing anything.
Yeah, not yet.
Yeah. But yeah, so today we have is this our first analytical pod?
Oh, yeah. Are we going more highbrow this time?
I guess. Unfortunately, I don't remember. What was the one that we did before Quarren Pod?
Well,
we did Bong Joon-ho.
That's like a big one that I remember. And after that, we did...
I thought we did another one after that.
Oh, boy.
Reader, we suck at this.
Yeah. But you were there.
Yeah,
we were there.
We were there.
We had a good time.
This feels like the first analytical pod, but
back to foundations. Back to school. Have a seat, everyone.
Yes, have a seat. And the best part about this one this week or whenever we are is that Clinton curated this one for the very first
time. Thank you. And it just so happens to have movies that you hated, apparently.
Yeah, I hated most of these. But to be fair, did you like all three of them?
Actually, yes.
Really?
One of the movies, we're going to talk about three different movies.
Yes.
And one of them came from your suggestion that you had found somewhere.
Yeah, we were going to do a queer horror episode.
Yeah.
That didn't happen.
Didn't happen. But I watched the episode. I did the homework.
Yes, you did.
And I actually really liked this one. So I was excited to bring it, started to talk about it at some point. And it is called, it has kind of a name that's a little hard to remember, a little wordy.
What keeps you alive?
What keeps you alive? No question mark.
Yeah. It's actually a pretty good name, but the thing is, when I first suggested it, I was like, what is keeping you alive?
Yeah.
What alive keeps you?
Right. That combination of alive and...
It's kind of basic in a way. Or typical. If you heard that was my cat.
That was May's giant cat climbing a regular cat-sized cat tree. But nothing is appropriately sized for this cat. He is clunking.
Okay. So, yes, what keeps you alive? Then we also did one that Clinton just saw randomly on Netflix, I guess.
Yes.
Called Girls with Balls.
Uh-huh. I gave it a try. And I was really impressed.
Yeah, he really liked it.
I think it has a transphobia name. Girls with Balls. It's like, ugh. And I actually think it does it a disservice. I think this is not that type of movie.
I think it's that type of movie, but we'll get into it. And then the last movie we'll be talking about today is Baccarat.
Baccarat.
Which Clinton
we talked
also
about a little bit last time.
Yeah.
But now it's here. Yeah. And you know what the theme is now, ladies and gentlemen, if you didn't read the podcast title. The
Hunter versus Hunted. Yes.
Yeah.
And honestly, this was such a good theme. I'm like so impressed that Clinton curated it.
Thank you.
Not because he's not. Yeah.
was very strenuous. I'm very smart.
No, because not only that, but there are actually many themes that tie these films together. One of them that we noticed is that they all pretty much have a female protagonist. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know,
that rules.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And even some of the hunter aspects are kind of left of normal too. They're not mm-hmm. the typical hunter, I guess you would say.
Yeah.
So
even, what is a typical hunter? Are you thinking like a monster movie?
No. Like
the man
exactly. The okay. man chasing
stalker kind of thing. Or
exactly.
Something?
You know that they're doing this because they're crazy or whatever.
Yeah. Too much. Oh, masculinity. Exactly.
There was literally a different kind of twist to the hunters in every single one of these films, uh-huh. and no matter whether I liked it or not, it is interesting. I think it's funny. I think I liked reading about these films more than I liked watching them, mm-hmm. except Baccarat. Baccarat, I had the same thing where like 40 minutes, I was like, where is this going? And then just completely opens up.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to talk about that. But before we get into it, let's catch up a bit.
On the quarantine, what have you watched since the last one? I wanted to mention that I did watch Satanic Panic, and you were right. It was so much everything that I would want in a movie. It was low budge, and that's okay. The low budgeness didn't hurt. I thought the beginning is a little rocky. Whenever you're watching a low budget or independent movie and you're like, I don't know, the acting might not be quite what you want or the story's not getting there, but this movie gets there and it is so fun. And I thought it was so smart, and it was written by that person,
Grady Hedrick, something like
who
that.
Who also writes a book.
Yeah.
And you think they're funny, and they're funny because they are funny. And Rebecca Romijn is great.
Rebecca Romijn, I just want to see her more horror films.
Me
she
too.
Really had fun with it.
That was exactly what I always want out of a horror movie, and most of the time don't get. So big ol' thank you. And thank you to Shudder.
Yeah.
That was worth it
Shudder
for me.
Shudder original.
The Shudder Shudder subscription pays for it right there.
Yeah, Shudder subscriptions are so cheap too, especially because I've been renting off of Amazon, and you just really kind of realize.
Yeah, that racks up.
Yeah, it does rack up. Yeah, so you watch Satanic Panic. I've been going through shows quite a bit. I rewatched What We Do in the Shadows, which is the best show on TV right now. I finished Legion, which was really, I liked it more than I thought I was going to like
Legion, three seasons, is that right?
Yeah, three
seasons.
It's a tight show, yeah.
It's a tight three.
It's a tight three, and it was built to be that three. I never saw Fargo. Did you see Fargo?
I saw one season, maybe just one episode. Or maybe the whole season, I don't remember.
It's the same creator.
Okay.
And so I think I did Fargo see the, is still I saw going.
Probably. I saw the first season of Legion, and we talked about it a little bit off the pod.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah, I told Clinton he should really watch it, because the thing that I like about Legion, and I don't know if I've said this on the podcast yet, but I don't like comic book things, especially Marvel. So I wanted to watch it because I really like the cast, which is basically Dan Stevens, who he was the guest in The Guest, which is one of my favorite horror films of all time. So I knew that he was gonna be really fun to watch. Mm-hmm. And I really love Aubrey Plaza. So I was like, okay, well, let me just see what's up. And the thing that I like about Legion is, especially if you don't really care about the character, like I don't care if it's being accurate or not. It's
accurate
really
accurate to the comic book, I
exactly.
guess.
Exactly. Yeah. It's really more about like schizophrenia and time travel and like mental
60s
illness
vibes, right?
Yeah, and it only gets deeper into that as the series goes on. That's kind of the interesting thing. Like the first season feels kind of normy, even though it's not
really. Yeah.
And then seasons two and three go way weird.
I think I stopped watching it mainly because I caught up with it, and then you got to wait for the next season and you kind of fall off. But I also was a little worried that I think at the end of the first season, it almost the conclusion feels a little too normy, where it's like, okay, now we're all get together to fight the bad guy. Yeah. And then I was like, oh, so maybe the next seasons are just going to be kind of more straight shooter stuff.
That's actually why I really like Legion, because I was like, oh, okay, so this is the bad guy, this is the good guy. I was just accepting that. But season two completely undoes that and even does something that makes the protagonist unforgivable in a way. And then the
third... it doesn't ruin the show, because a lot of times that would just ruin...
Yeah, no, like exactly. I thought everyone in the first season was likable. And then by the end of the third season, there was only one character that I was really rooting for. But I didn't mind seeing how everything broke down, because I think that was the point of the show, just showing how heroes and villains and things like that. So it's a really interesting watch.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say it's like one of the best shows ever, but I'm really glad I watched it.
And yeah.
Especially because I've been watching so many things recently, I really appreciate an ambitious show. And that show is nothing but ambitious. Like in the second season, there's this random dance battle between Jermaine Clement, Aubrey Plaza, and Dan Stevens. And I'm like, who the fuck would think of this?
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
That's another thing. Jermaine Clement is major in the second season, and I really like him. Mm-hmm. So... yeah, it was a really fun watch. If you have Hulu, I would strongly recommend it. You can probably finish it in 1 or 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. I'll throw in another one here. Yeah. I saw the remake of Pet Sematary.
Oh, you didn't tell me. Tell me.
I think I agree with the reviewers on this one, who said that it kind of has a cool setup and you think it's going to be... It fakes into a more, oh, we're going to be more about loss and deeper than just like pets coming back alive and shit coming back alive. But then it kind of veers. It doesn't have anywhere to go. It's yeah. not clever when it needs to be. But John Lithgow.
Lithgow, yeah.
Lithgow is so great. And so fun to watch. And it really reminds me that sometimes a movie can be not that great, but still have a great performance.
Oh, yeah.
And you're like, ooh, I don't mind that movie sucked, because that was fun.
Yeah, I feel that way about a lot of things I've been watching recently, actually. So,
yeah.
For sure. That's interesting.
Pet Sematary. I give it a meh.
Yeah.
I
saw Angst on Shudder, which is this really classic 80s film that influenced a bunch of weirdos. Mm. And it was interesting. It's actually one of Eric's favorite films.
Eric, which is from?
Eric Allen Hatch.
From
Twitter.
Twitter and Beyond Video?
Beyond Video, yeah. He mentioned it once, so it's been on my list. So I watched it.
What's the genre? Is it like experimental?
It's a horror.
Straight up 80s horror?
It's 80s, but it's not American.
Okay.
It's Swedish or German or Austrian, one of those.
Okay.
I forget. It was definitely, I'm glad I watched it, but it was, and you can kind of see where people have bitten off of it, but at the end of it, I didn't feel too much.
Do you think I would like it?
No.
Damn. Okay.
Did you like Possession? I forgot.
I don't think I saw Possession.
Oh, you still haven't seen Possession. Did you see Uncut Gems?
No, I need to watch it though.
Okay. Yeah. All right. That's fine.
Okay.
I gave him Uncut Gems to watch last time.
Last
no, it's okay.
Year. Yeah. I think it's coming to Netflix too, Uncut Gems.
I think you're going to watch it on Netflix before you watch it on Blu-ray, because you're right. I think it's coming on Netflix at the end of the month.
Mm-hmm.
And we're already pretty much there.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's see. Oh, one thing that I did not plug last time that I was so mad about, and this is actually probably legit my favorite thing I've found in quarantine.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if I've even told you, mainly because I just keep forgetting. I don't know what's wrong.
Yeah.
The Cinephobe. Have I told you about?
Is this a person, place, or thing? What are we talking about?
Okay, so I found out about the Cinephobe through Eric. And the Cinephobe is this online channel that has programming from pretty much, I want to say, like 7 p.m. Eastern time until 7 a.m. Eastern time. So it's kind of like
a channel, like a TV channel that you could watch programs on the internet at specific times.
Let me explain this.
Okay.
So the thing that's so fascinating about it is that, yeah, it's like a TV channel, say if you were to have HBO, you know, and these movies play at this time. So the thing Cinephobe does, though, is that it posts its schedule a day in advance. So you never really know what's upcoming. And it specializes in out of print and rare films. Ooh, wow. And like, I'm talking about films that I've never heard of, films that have been lost over the years, and just things that go from silent films to films released in the last few years. And they are just so fascinating because it's like you can find anything on Cinephobe any night. And I've been watching a lot of that. Like, I've been learning about so many movies that I'd never heard of. The last one that I saw was last Friday. Their midnight movie was The Evictors. And it's this kind of like Amityville slasher that, again, I never heard of. And it starred one of my favorite actresses, Jessica Harper, who was the lead in Suspiria. And again, I had never heard of this film. Just what they do is they post a synopsis. They have their channel, which the website is cinephobe.tv.
Is it spelled any creative way or Cinephobe. Is it straight up?
No, yeah.
Not S-Y-N-O-P-H-O-B-E.
Nope. Cine like...
Like cinema, cinnamon.
No, cinema like cinema. So okay. C-I-N-E and then phobe.
Phobe. Okay.
Cinephobe.com? No, cinephobe.tv.
.tv.
And already
holy mackerel. Like, has there just been a .tv this whole time and nobody uses it?
No. I mean, okay. So the thing about like them programming stuff is I don't know their legalities, but I think a lot of it, one, they must have just been collecting films online for the last like 20 years. Two, I do think that they work with some publishers and stuff, but I think just most of the stuff that they play, like I said, is just kind of really lost in the sense that these are films that no one has seen in like, they're
very obscure. Are they?
But they're very good.
Really?
Like they're quality.
Tough. Yeah.
No, yeah. And I'm saying I've seen
this
a Western.
Undercutting the Criterion Collection subscribers.
Dude, kind of. Yeah. I've been watching more stuff on Cinephobe than I've been watching in Criterion lately.
Wow.
Just because it's just like such interesting stuff. Like, I've seen a Western directed by Paul Newman on there. I've seen that slasher that I told you about. I saw a 3-hour divorce drama.
Oh my gosh.
The other night. No, it's just really fascinating. So I strongly urge, and this is free, completely free. You pull it up. There's something usually
always
playing.
You download
playing.
Something onto your computer.
No, you don't.
It runs through all your credit card information.
No, that's the incredible thing. It's just so user-friendly.
Yeah.
And even people who I don't think like pretentious films and things like that, I'm like, no, just
you might like
follow
this.
The Instagram. Yeah.
I mean, for
because
a quarantine
so
activity, too,
things.
That's pretty fun. Like social watching.
Yeah.
Socially planned.
Exactly,
events.
Because
that's what we're missing.
No, exactly, because you don't need to worry about setting it up yourself. It's just gonna
it's
play.
There.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So a huge
you don't
shout
have to
out.
Be like, hey everyone, come over to my house and we'll watch this 3-hour divorce drama. And yeah,
yeah,
you can just say
no.
Hey.
Yeah, so definitely Cinephobe, check it out. I watch something on there at least weekly and it makes me so happy.
Yeah, I'm gonna check it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's the bulk of...
I got another one.
Oh,
real
yeah,
quick.
Go.
Season of the Witch. You know about that?
Halloween?
No. Good. Although, yes.
Oh.
Season of the Witch, like the renamed title. This is George Romero's follow-up. Second movie after Night of the Living Dead.
Okay.
And it's about bored housewives going into witchcraft in the 60s.
Okay, and
that's it.
No further comment.
Yeah, it's got some cool. Oh, it's got some cool acting. It's got some cool beats. You know. Yeah, you know, you watch a movie from that has enough character and color in it from the 60s, and you just feel like you're soaking up the vibes.
Right.
And it's okay if it doesn't, you know, it doesn't spectacular hit you over with anything in particular. It doesn't do any one thing super great, but it is, I thought it was, it was a decent watch.
I love that. That's funny. Okay, cool. Yeah, I think those are the most memorable things I've watched since quarantine. Oh, I started Better Call Saul. Holy fuck. I'm going to be so depressed when I'm done with it. I already finished season one.
Because you
one.
Love it so much?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just...
And you're a Breaking Bad stan.
I'm a huge Breaking Bad fan.
This is just a continuation, right?
Yeah, exactly. Of the world. The thing is, I never watched Better Call Saul live because I wanted to give it time. And then finally, like last week, I was like, now's the fucking time, man. Especially because it just ended last month. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I started it. If you're a Breaking Bad fan and you haven't seen Better Call Saul, get your shit together.
Yeah.
If anything, I feel mad at myself. I'm like, I could have been enjoying this over the last several years.
Yeah.
Bob Odenkirk is one of the most incredible actors living right now. If he doesn't, I mean, I don't want him to die anytime soon.
Oh my God. Corona save him.
No, but if Bob Odenkirk doesn't ever get an Emmy in the next like 10 years, I'm gonna kill myself.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So Better Call Saul.
Yeah. I was gonna say, I just have one comment on Better Call Saul.
But
it sounds like a terrible idea to spin off Breaking Bad with that character. Particularly for me, sounds like a bad idea, but I have only heard great things. So more power to them. I'm glad they did it.
Yeah. Actually, Saul was my favorite character, so I didn't need to be convinced, but I have spoken to people that watch it that didn't like Saul. And then the first season already picks up kind of in the Breaking Bad universe. He isn't Saul Goodman yet, and then you just see it grow. But I mean, you're seeing people that, if you're a big fan of Breaking Bad, we have Hector Salamanca is one of the major characters in the first season. Mike Jonathan Banks is pretty much the other lead character, and it's so good. It's drama to the highest tension, like to the point where sometimes I'm like, I don't think anyone, even in these situations, would act this way, but it's just so good to watch. Like, it's so tense, and everyone is such a good actor, and they don't blink, and it's just beautiful.
Is it written, directed, same people, Breaking Bad?
Yes. So it's all kept within the same family. Definitely watch it if you haven't yet. And okay, now I
think that's speaking of tension, let me tell you, some of these movies have a lot of tension, but not Girls with Balls. Some of the other ones.
Well, the one that we're going to start with is What Keeps You Alive.
Yes.
So something interesting too, sometimes we usually cheat and have an American film in here, but we don't this time. All of our films are foreign.
International.
Yes. So the first one coming up is Girls with Balls 2018.
Oh, wait. I thought you said it was going to be
Oh, sorry.
What We Do in the Shadows. What Is the Life? Live. What do you live for? What's the movie called?
The first movie, because we always like to go in chronological order of when it was released. This film was released in August of 2018 from Canada. 2008. I said 2018. What Keeps You Alive?
What Keeps You Alive?
All right.
I never told you about my first wife, did I? Erica. We got married when I was only 19. I mourned her, prayed with her parents, cried at her funeral.
And of course, it has to look like an accident.
Did Megan not tell you anything about Jenny?
No, never. I'll do the same at yours.
You must be confused. Why would your wife do this to you? Probably thinking, we're in love, right?
Feel that? Your heart racing. How do you feel?
Steady.
Exactly.
Done playing around. I know these woods. At the back of my hand.
What turned you into this monster?
It's nature, not nurture.
All those people, they trusted you. I trusted you.
I'm free in all the ways you're not. You're trapped by emotions, weighed down by guilt.
You are never going to do this again.
I'm not going to let you do it again. Your conscience isn't a source of strength. Your Achilles heel. My dad, he used to say to me, you only kill what keeps you alive. I will bleed myself
dry. All right, everyone, and that was What Keeps You Alive, 2018, directed by Colin Minahan and starring Brittany Allen, which, fun fact, is his wife. So
I was going to ask you, because Colin is spelled C-O-L-I-N. And so I wasn't sure gender. I wasn't sure who, you know, was this male, female, who, you know.
Yeah.
So it was male.
Yes.
Was written, directed.
By him.
Okay.
Yes.
Interesting, because the story is of a lesbian couple,
yes,
married couple.
Yes.
And things go wrong.
Things go wrong.
I want to say here, because I really liked 2/3 of this movie. And if you spoil the twist in this movie, if you want to see this movie and you don't want to be spoiled, jump ahead a couple minutes in our podcast, because the twist is so important to enjoying this movie.
What do you mean the twist?
Okay, so if you don't want to be spoiled, just jump.
I think the reason why I'm confused you call it a twist is because the twist is in the synopsis.
Well, yeah, but if you read the synopsis, then, you know.
Okay, reader.
So who reads the synopsis anymore? So I went into this knowing, okay, May recommended it to me, gaze and horror, and the horror and the gaze. But the first, I don't know, third of this movie, some chunk of this movie, quarter of this movie is
quarter
is a romantic cabin cup. The couple is just enjoying each other. Yes. How long was it?
Four scenes.
So, of what?
And 15 minutes in.
15 minutes. Okay. I was also interested in when this. So the twist, ladies and gentlemen, is that you're feeling all lovey-dovey or whatever, and they go out hiking, and there's this tension of, like, when's something going to happen? And then the one woman just pushes her partner, her beloved wife, and she just throws her down a mountain and
that
tries to kill her.
Shock me, though.
Did it? Yeah.
I kind of knew it was coming.
Yeah.
But
same. But that, I was still like,
I was like, oh, shit, she's dead.
Yeah.
And she didn't die. Which I don't know how she didn't die, but
yeah, I think they played it off well. I mean, she looked very hurt. She didn't look like, ooh,
but then,
scratches.
Like, 2/3 of the movie, she seemed to have been like magically cured.
Okay, so that's where I think the movie develops an incredible attention, because when the wife pushes her partner down the mountain and tries to kill her. And then she realizes she's still alive. So then she's got to, like, hunt her further to fully finish the job.
Yeah.
And then you have the hunter hunted.
Yeah.
And I think it develops this amazing tension where you're really pulling for the half dead woman. And you're thinking, how the hell is she going to make it out of here? My favorite scene in probably the whole movie is when the hunted gets in the boat and is trying to.
Oh God, that scene.
Yeah. Okay.
The rowboat
okay.
Scene.
So she's rowing to the neighbor's house, And I believe the neighbor is like, like outside doing some yard work or something. Yeah. And so she's like furiously like paddling. And then the hunter gets in a boat and starts paddling quicker because she's not half dead. So there's this tension of like, who is going to get there first? And the hunted catches up to the hunt. The hunter catches up to the prey.
Yeah.
And but then you still have this tension because she can't murder her right in front of the neighbor.
Right.
And then you have the neighbor, and this weird situation happens where then somehow they cover the hunter covers and they like get invited over to dinner.
Yeah. So what happens is the hunter gets in the same boat, but since the husband is watching, she can't kill him. And so he's like, okay, well, I'll see you for dinner tomorrow. And then the prey, the half-dead woman, shouts suddenly, no, come over for dinner tonight.
Yeah.
And that's how that worked.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which actually, that was believable. But honestly, that whole scene just made me want to like die.
Because?
Like, why? It's just like, it was so kind of unrealistic and silly. And when I read interviews with Brittany and Colin, they were like, yeah, this scene was supposed to be kind of for laughs. And I'm
no
like,
way.
Yeah.
I was on the edge of my seat.
No. They said kind of for laughs, but also tension. That way, like, you could laugh through the tension. And I just don't think it was there. So
you didn't feel that tension?
So actually, one question I want to ask you is, So you kind of answered it in a way that the movie kind of does start off as a romance. Mm-hmm. We do know that it's a genre film, so we are kind of expecting something, but we're kind of led along.
But we don't read the synopsis. We don't know. We don't watch the trailer, which gives it all away too.
Right. Oh my God. You watched the trailer?
Well, today I watched it.
Oh, I didn't watch the trailer. Oh my God. That's so funny.
It's so cringy if you watch a trailer.
Oh my God.
Because then you just get all the dialogue.
I actually feel like my biggest problem with this movie is that it was cringy throughout. But before I trash this film.
Yeah, I can't believe you didn't like this.
Well, I have very, I think, obvious reasons why I didn't.
Okay.
But we'll get into that. I want to know, how did you feel? Like, did you feel like the film was changing as you watched it? Like, did you feel like it was changing genres? Or did you feel like how did the film ride you emotionally, would you say?
Well, I was all in. I was going to give it the Oscars for the at the boat scene. I was thinking, this is a truly special movie. And then I think it trades in the tension for a little bit of hijinks or something. There's just too many. There's too many unbelievable things where it's like, really? She would do that? Really?
The ending, especially when she drives off and then stops.
Oh my God.
To go back.
I was pretty pissed off about that.
Right.
Too.
Yeah. I felt that kind of throughout, though. I do think the first half of the movie I liked better because I was a little bit more optimistic, but then it just didn't get better.
Yeah.
It got worse.
It does get worse. Yeah.
Kind of my main problem with this is that it's a pretty generic film. I feel like, sure, it's tense, but it's like a bloodier Lifetime movie in a way. Between.
That's a diss.
Well, and then I was like, well, you know why I feel it's weird? I feel like the writer didn't connect to these characters. And I was like, well, I know it's a man. Let me just do research. And so when I did research, Colin wrote this movie as a heterosexual couple, and the guy goes crazy and kills the girl. And then,
just wouldn't have been as good.
Yeah, but then he was like, but then like a year later, I was like, oh, you know what I should do? I should make them a lesbian couple.
Yeah.
And
then somebody, like some producer somewhere, was like, yes.
No, yeah, basically. And I kind of hate that because you can tell that there's just no connection as to what that even means to the characters, as in a queer relationship, but also, you know, the monstrous feminine kind of angle. And he was like, his justification too, he says that he was really intrigued by having a female psychopath because there's not that many female psychopaths. And I'm like, well, if you actually did your research on Queer 101, the lesbian psychopath is one of the most damaging stereotypes in horror films. Like, it's not new, it's not done. So, like, my main problem with What Keeps You Alive is that it's obviously competently made to a certain extent. I do agree that it just veers off into, like, weird, like, she explains her reasoning for everything.
The main bad lady.
But again, my main problem was
like
that,
an evil villain kind of thing. Like, yeah, this was my plan all along.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. My God. It was so annoying.
I'm not going to kill you now because it would be better to.
Why wouldn't she? There was also like that point where she clearly wanted to kill her ASAP. Yeah. And then suddenly she doesn't want to kill her.
Right.
It
probably happened after that boat, because then it's like, oh, I could kill you, but then they're coming over for dinner. So how could I possibly hide
that? And then she ends
that?
Up killing the couple. And it's just like, yeah, it's nonsensical. And I wouldn't go so far to call it offensive, because I wouldn't really say that. But I do think the disconnect and the symbolism of what these characters were was totally lost on the director himself.
Yeah.
And one thing that I wanted to say is I thought the location was really interesting.
Cool. It looked like it was filmed in the woods in a cabin.
It was.
Right where it was supposed to be.
But I think especially there are two scenes I think of. I think of the first scene when they go into the house. It was all done in one shot and the camera follows them throughout the house. And that was cool. And then in the ending scene, the struggle we actually don't see. I don't know if you remember. He only films the ceiling and we only hear what happens or what we assume happens. And I thought that was interesting. So there are definitely moments of intrigue here. And I guess if you're really into wanting to see some queer horror, it technically counts, but there's barely any like context even within that. It's pretty much a straightforward thriller.
Yeah. I'm wondering if, because I'm not queer myself, if I get more excited by the representation.
Yeah.
And I think I might just get blinded by that, because I'm like, oh, cool, a gay couple and they're married and that's where the story begins.
Yeah.
And I don't get into the further.
Yeah.
And I don't realize the disconnects and the fact that, yeah, it could have just been any couple. It really, didn't.
That's the thing. Yeah. And that's what bothers me, because at that point you're using gay people as props, you know, just to kind of open it up to another audience. And especially coming from, this film was made by a couple. Brittany is the half-dead girl. That's his wife. And Colin wrote and directed it. Brittany, the half-dead wife, also did all of the music for the movie.
That's cool.
So that's interesting.
Cool. Yeah.
I mean, it's clear that they work well together, but if we're really to analyze this film for what it's supposed to represent, I just think it falls short. It is, you know, pretty standard Hunter versus Hunted, though.
Yeah. I would love to watch the first 45 minutes again. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, skip around a little bit at the beginning because I know what's going to happen and then go. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That's fair. Yeah.
No. I like the Hunter versus Hunted genre.
I think you do.
I do.
I like it too.
There's survival. There's.
Yeah. I mean, that's essentially slasher films in a way.
That's true.
But I feel like all of these, and I mean, to give the film some credit, it is unusual to kind of see a female psychopath, but I mean, they also didn't build her character up, you know? So.
Yeah, there was some backstory, but you didn't really care.
It was a weird backstory about hunting, you know, but that was it, you know? But otherwise, like, oh, and then you see that she's, had done this to like at least 10 women
that
before.
Was a little dumb that didn't need to happen.
Way down. That's what I'm
like
saying.
Not only is she a murderer, she's a super murderer. She kills everyone.
Yeah, and no one knows.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. So well intentioned, and Clinton thinks you should watch it.
I thought it, yeah, it gets a thumbs up from me.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah.
All right. Are we ready to keep going?
Yeah. What's the next one?
So this next one came out a month later in September of 2018, Girls with Balls, directed by Olivia Alfonso.
C'est moi la capitaine, quand je donne des ordres obéis.
Ou peut-être plutôt que t'es pas faite pour être capitaine.
Ah, fermez vos putains de gueules! Vous entendez ce que vous dites? Vous voulez que je vous dise pourquoi on est passé pour une belle bande de connasses. Et moi je suis pas une connasse, ok?
Oui, coach, oui, coach. Coach.
Merci.
J'arrive pas à me repérer, y'a pas un seul panneau ici.
Ce qui est bizarre, c'est qu'on aurait dû croiser la nationale il y a au moins une heure. Ces demoiselles et moi-même voudrions une chambre pour la nuit, s'il vous plaît.
T'as l'air à coucher debout ou quoi?
Hein? Oh, attends, ça va pas, je te coupe les couilles!
On est foutu. On n'est pas foutu. On est une équipe.
Go Falcons!
All right, and that was Girls with Balls, directed by Olivia Alfonso. This is a French film.
And I saw French/Belgian. Do you know anything about
that?
Yeah,
I think that means that the producers might have been from Belgium, the director himself, he's French.
All right.
And the writing and the crew, they were French. It was shot in France.
Okay.
And things
what
like
can
that.
You tell us about this gem?
So, Girls with Balls. I really hated this film.
So
here's the story about Girls with Balls coming into our lives.
Our personal,
this was like first week of quarantine, I remember, because okay. I asked Eric to watch it with me, and so
virtually on the computer, I guess.
Yeah, we yeah, obviously.
Yeah, you guys did like a virtual hangout. One of
yeah,
your
we were texting
Zoom or something.
We thought no, yeah, I do that sometimes with Gabby. Like, we'll FaceTime and watch something, but most of the time it's text. Anyway, so Clinton, like, first week of quarantine was like, you need to watch Girls with Balls. And I Googled it, and I saw that it was a French film. And, Reader, I don't know if you remember, but I hate French films for the most part. Like, me and the French don't get along. And Clinton was like, yeah, I feel the same way, but I think you're going to love it. And I was like, you know what? If Clinton says so, then okay.
I don't remember using exactly those words.
I can pull it up.
You don't have to pull it up. I mean, earlier in the quarantine, it was just sunnier days, maybe, you know? This
so
is very much in my wheelhouse.
Were you just
wheelhouse.
Like browsing on Netflix and you were like, why not?
Yeah, you know, Netflix tries to curate what movies they think you will like.
Yeah.
And so they know they're tapped into your the DNA of your
okay.
trash self.
I
so
guess.
This one popped up and it was one of those, the name is a little too try hard. It's like, yeah. Girls with Balls.
Get it.
Yeah. And it's like, and so we both have talked about before too, how we don't really like the super over the top, like referencing back to previous movies
yeah.
and where they feel like they're just rehashing all the hacker stuff, slasher stuff, but
yeah.
they're not actually offering anything new. I thought that, I guess I thought you would like, it's an all-female cast for the most part.
Yes.
There's some of the bad guys are guys.
The hunters are all
the hunters. And the coach is a man.
Yes.
And
there's a minstrel and he's also a man.
A minstrel?
The dude.
Oh, yes. Yeah, the guitar player kind of dude, narrator.
We call them minstrels.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That also has other connotations.
Yes, it does. Yeah.
But yeah, in U.S. history. But
yes.
I thought you would like, again, I guess it's just like get blinded by the representation. I'm like, there's all these women and they get to be kind of badass. And there's some gay women as well. But again, I might have just hit that
the
surface
hunters.
And not gotten the deeper part, which is that one of the lesbian characters was like super aggressive, horny. And, you know, so maybe wasn't as good of a pig as I thought it would be.
The hunters are gay. They're gay men.
The hunters are gay?
Did you miss that?
Yes.
Yeah, they're gay men.
Are you sure they're not just French?
Dude, no, I read an interview.
You read it?
Yeah, he said that.
Was that
it's
in
kind
the movie
of tip,
also?
It was intentional. He said that because usually when it's like hunter versus hunted, especially in a gender disparity, the prey tries to kind of like use their sexuality towards them. And so there's a scene in the movie where that tries to happen and the hunter isn't interested because he's gay.
Oh, so I have to watch it again.
Yeah. So he said that, and to him, the thing that was interesting with Girls with Balls, I really didn't like it. I thought, my main thing was that it was just clearly made for Americans.
You thought so?
Oh, yeah. And he says so himself.
Really?
He says that in France.
I hate it when they say the thing that you agree with. You know what I mean?
I do my research.
Why don't they say the things that I think?
I do my research.
Yeah.
Damn it. That's okay. Why I have a career.
So he made this for...
Well, kind of. So what he said is that this kind of film is very difficult to make in France because France is all about, you know, meaning and things like that. Mm-hmm. And he genuinely said that his main motive for this film wasn't even if people liked it. He just wanted people to have fun. He's like, my man, you're gonna super love this.
Yeah.
He said that the three main inspirations for this film were Sam Raimi, Peter Jackson, and Alex de la Iglesia.
Ooh.
Yeah, he said...
Wait. Can you break it down? What was the first one?
Sam Raimi, so which Evil Dead films.
Evil Dead, okay.
Peter Jackson, which is like Dead Alive.
Okay.
And then Alex de la Iglesia,
yeah.
Your man.
Hell yeah, love him. Love all three.
So, and then whoop. Like...
We love us some girls with balls.
You do. But I kind of like... could appreciate that.
Okay.
Well, appreciate his perspective.
Yeah.
But just like from a personal standpoint, like nothing about it appealed to me. Like I like the kind of minstrel character. And he said that he included the minstrel character because the dude is spoiling the film for you before you watch it. Mm-hmm. And he feels it added like this layer of absurdity. I did have problems with how most of the women talked because they were just like super vulgar.
Yeah.
And it kind of felt like a dude was writing that for them.
Really?
It didn't feel natural to me. So kind of that. But the thing that I will say is more successful with Girls with Balls than, say, What Keeps You Alive is that he really kind of sticks to this thesis of being like as ridiculous as possible.
Yeah.
And just because I didn't like it, as soon as I finished it, I was like, yeah, I could see why Clinton liked that.
Yeah. It's a hit, ladies and gentlemen. It's a hit. my favorite thing about it is that it can be really silly, but then it doesn't lose tension and it keeps the story going. Like there's a scene where the girls are pummeling volleyballs. They've got nothing left, so they just start pummeling volleyballs at the bad guys, and the bad guys are like, ooh, and they start going down like one at a time, and it's this silly goofy thing, but then after that moment, then all the bad guys get back up, and then it's like okay, back to reality, back to you know, facing death. And I loved it. I had a lot of fun.
That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, literally, he said that at Fantastic Fest, he had people come up to him all, honestly, I don't think I liked your film, but I had fun during it. And he said that those comments meant more to him than someone just straight up liking it. And I can...
Wait, what?
So
why wouldn't he like it more if someone's like, I loved your film.
He's fucking French.
And I had fun. That's so true.
Fun fact about Olivier, though.
He's like, you fucking idiot.
You fucking don't like me.
This was not a good movie. You were supposed to have fun.
Yes, that's literally what he says. And so, again, this is where I kind of respect Olivier a lot.
Uh-huh.
Fun fact, he's a special effects guy. This was his feature film.
Mm-hmm.
He did all of the special effects for Knife and Heart.
Okay.
The
French movie that you love the most.
Dildo Switchblade. Oh, that was all
that
Olivier.
Haunts my dream. And he did the gore special effects for Raw.
Yes. Which we also have seen for this podcast.
Which is gross.
So,
real gross.
So this dude, and I mean, the
real
gore,
messed up guy here.
Yeah, the gore, because I wouldn't say it's over the top in gore, but there are definitely gory
moments. It's silly.
Moments.
It's my favorite kind. It's just silly.
Yeah.
It's like decapitation, head flying around thing.
So that was really interesting to find out.
It's not as scintillating as one might think.
As in nudity?
Right. There's no nudity.
So that was the other thing. Even though I had problems with how the woman spoke, it was just like way too dumb for me.
Mm-hmm.
I did appreciate, he said that he really wanted to make a film about a group of women. He didn't want one woman. He wanted a big female cast.
Okay.
And so the whole volleyball tournament thing happened because of that. They were just workshopping ideas.
Uh-huh.
So I kind of really like that he walked into this film wanting to be like, hey, I want to make a film about a group of women. What is a story that we can write? That way we have a group of women taking over the shit.
Okay.
And he said they considered doing an a cappella group, nunneries.
No.
But they settled on the volleyball thing. And actually, you know what? I kind of respect it. Reading up about this film made me appreciate it
All right. There we go.
Especially because he himself says there's no deeper meaning to this film.
Yeah.
I just wanted to make something ridiculous. And honestly, I can respect that.
I actually think he's selling himself a little short, because when the coach character, when the chihuahua is biting the coach character's penile area, and then he takes the chihuahua off and stretches the chihuahua until he bursts into two.
Fun fact.
I think there you could actually get a lot of deeper meaning there.
Olivier is a vegan, and they asked him about that scene.
Okay.
And he was like, I just thought it was an absurd thing, and that's why I wanted to put it in.
Uh-huh.
So
I could feel just high fives from the director and myself as I was watching this movie. That was just a moment where I was like, yeah!
So, Girls with Balls. I hated it, but I do agree with Clinton that if you just want something where just fucking anything happens.
Short, fun.
Yeah. And the kind of the craziest part about this film for me is that they got like French legends to play some of the hunters.
Mm-hmm.
So we have Denis Levant as the main guy. And this guy is one of the most well-known French actors of all time. And then they had Guillaume Canet have a cameo in it as
Legends.
And that motherfucker is one of France's most beloved directors over the last 20 years or so.
And he is
and
a
actors.
Character in it? He's one of the hunters?
He's one of the hunters, yeah.
Legends.
If anything, I was just like so surprised because Guillaume doesn't make genre films. And so I was just like, oh, wow, he has a sense of humor. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And the coach seemed a little weird to me, a little out of place. Yeah. Was the coach like a famous person, a famous comedian
or
something?
Those were the only two names. Actually, Eric only watched it with me because he liked Denis Levant so much.
Was that the legend?
Yeah, the Satanist dude.
Okay.
So, but you know what's, I will say, it's fucked up that he didn't let Dennis use his body because Dennis is actually a contortionist. That's kind of what he's known for in the films that he does appear in. Huh. Like, he was in a lot of Claire Denis films, which...
Never.
Yeah. So, yeah. Girls with Great. Balls.
Girls with Balls.
Yeah.
What do you think? Recommend?
I think I recommend it just because Olivier clearly doesn't like the French that much either, because he said that he still has a very hard time describing to people what this film was about in France.
Yeah.
Whereas when he came to America, everyone got it. Everyone's immediately.
Like, got it.
Yeah.
Enough said.
Yeah.
Enough said, brother.
If I were
pumping into my veins.
If I were to kind of give this film like a synopsis, I feel like it's like American Pie on steroids.
Yeah.
I really do.
Yeah.
The humor's just so American Pie. And I really hated those films. Mm-hmm. So if you like American Pie, you're going to love this movie.
Give it a try.
All right. Okay. Are we ready to move
on? We're ready for our grand finale.
All righty. Up next is Baccarat.
Você quer viver ou morrer?
All right, and that was a bit of Baccarat, directed by, I'm going to try and say this in Portuguese.
Okay.
Juliano Dornelis and Kleber Mendoza Filho.
Hmm, two
people. Speak Portuguese.
You speak Portuguese.
I do. I don't know if you knew that.
Cool.
So yes, Baccarat, it was made last year. No, I think it was made in 2018, and then it hit festivals last year, and then it was supposed to have a big release in the first quarter of this year, but that's when quarantine hit. And so we found out about Baccarat because our local indie theaters, in order to kind of like stay afloat, they offered this film to watch. Mm-hmm. And Clinton watched it.
I didn't
even know it was a genre film when it came out, but he watched it. He did the hard work.
Yeah, I did.
It fits super well.
This is a horror spiria right up in our business. Would
you? Okay, I have an opinion on this. Would you say it's a horror film?
You know, trying to really... Sure. It's like so many movies that we can kind of say it's like horror, comma, other things too.
So
thrill. I mean, I don't know. It's the whole like, what is a horror, you know?
I like that answer though, because to me, this is a straight up horror film.
Straight up. Oh, that was a trick question. I thought you were gonna tell me it's not.
No. I mean, no. Especially this film, out of the three films that we watched, felt like the only real film to
me. Yeah.
And mainly because it was so fleshed out, and I could clearly see the lineage of what these horrors meant. And then, as Clinton says, it's kind of ironic that it happens that way, because Baccarat isn't really labeled as a horror film. People do consider it a genre film. So Wikipedia... Actually,
I was just going to say.
Weird Western.
Yes.
Is what they say.
Yeah.
And
the front, like first sentence.
Yeah.
Is a 2000. Somebody wrote this and somebody said, yes. Weird Western film.
Weird Western. I so guess, weird Western films are typically Western films that have a horror element. So,
is that a whole genre? There's enough of them?
A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night is the other one that we could say is a weird Western.
Was that the Iranian?
The Iranian one, yes. But yeah, kind of.
A subgenre.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. It's not one that I'm super familiar with. But yeah. Honestly, after seeing the movie, I was like, okay, that's fair. But I will say, I feel like it is unequivocally a genre film. And I actually would say without hesitating that it's absolutely a horror film. Because... Yeah. It hammers in this cultural anxiety thing so well in a way that is almost like blinding. Like after I watched that movie, I was like, that's one of the best movies I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. So, wow. I didn't know you liked it so much. Okay,
I really
great.
Did. When did I watch it? I only like watched it a few days ago.
It was like two strikes in the pitcher and I had one more pitch and I threw the ball and I was just like, no, they're not going to want it. And then... Boom, I guess the analogy just kind of totally falls apart totally there because I'm not apart. Trying to strike you out, but I'm glad you really like this one.
No, yeah, I saw it a few days ago. Let's so synopsize. Very recently. Yes. So this, to give some cultural context, this film takes place in the Sao Tao. And what a Sao Tao is, it's a mountainous village. They're mountainous village towns in Brazil. And typically, kind of like... The conception of Sao Taos are that like uneducated people live there, very insular. But the directors themselves actually were saying that Sao Taos are actually majority white. So those kind of stereotypes
so
are
kind of like country folk is what we would have in the US.
And so not to get too ahead, so it takes place in the Sao Tao.
Okay.
I'll give more context to Bacurau in a bit, but go ahead and finish. So it takes place in the Sao Tao. Yeah. What happens? Should we?
Well, yeah. No, I think we can certainly give the twist that I gave the last episode, which was
disclaimer. Okay. We are going to be talking about spoilers here. I don't feel like it takes away from it.
Nah. Yeah.
And we kind of hinted to it already. So
yeah,
go ahead.
So the town basically comes under attack.
Yeah.
And mysteriously, you're not really sure what's what. And then pretty soon, at some point, it reveals the whole what's what. It reveals who the hunters are, who the hunted is.
Yeah.
It does take a long time to get there. But
it does.
Looking back,
I am glad.
Yeah.
I'm glad.
It builds this world. Yeah. And I feel like I've been there.
Yeah. Yeah. So an interesting thing about the way that they approached Bacurau, they definitely wanted to make a film about the Sao Tao. But as they were doing research, because these dudes are from the city, they're not from the country.
Okay, and made by two dudes. Those are the two people at the beginning.
Yes.
Okay.
And they themselves said that they didn't want to make something that was exploitative. Mm-hmm. You know, they really wanted... It's been like...
They weren't going to make Midsommar.
Basically. No, but the interesting thing is when they were visiting these Sao Taos, they found... a different kind of town.
Okay.
So Sao Tao's majority white Brazilians, usually they're poor, yes, but that's kind of the racial makeup there.
Yeah.
But then there's a different kind of town that's even below a Sao Tao, settled kind of in the same region. And those are called quilombos. Quilombos are mountains, village communities in Brazil that were built by runaway slaves. So entirely black. So what the directors were saying when they were doing their research, you know, they would be meeting with the Sao Tao people, you know, kind of like this, kind of what they expected, kind of like a white Brazilian experience. But then they came about on the Quilombos, which were just all black people at black Brazilians. And he said that that completely gave them a different idea for Bacurau.
Okay.
So he likes to call Bacurau the city, the town, because it's not a real town in Brazil. It's a made up town. He likes to think of it as a remixed Quilombo. A remix Quilombo. So the majority, honestly, of the racial makeup of Bacurau is either indigenous or black. But we do have white people in the mix too. So he said that he kind of like wanted to meld the town spirit together by, you know, taking the like myths of the Saotao, but also merging it with the very real reality of Quilombos.
Yeah.
And I thought that was so fascinating.
Yeah. I'm really glad you did that research and told us, because when I was watching, I don't know if you noticed, but I noticed, I was like, wow, this is a really interracial group for what is usually just portrayed as one
segregated
or the other.
Yes.
And I just, but I also thought that the movie seemed so real that I thought that was accurate, that maybe the poor and the country folk were a mix. Maybe that was a Brazilian thing.
Yeah.
So I'm actually glad to know now that that's not true.
It's not.
Not that I'm glad that it's not true, but glad that I know, because I was under the assumption of, well, maybe in Brazilian society, there is just more integrated experience.
No, and that was very intentional on their part.
Interesting.
And I think that, that alone, as you said, is the world building. Because honestly, the first 40 minutes of this film, you kind of think that it's going to be about this matriarch dying. And it is about the matriarch dying, but you think that maybe something's going to happen because of that. But everything that kind of happens in the film seems in spite of that. Even though I will say I actually really like the final scene, I think it was, because it ends on the matriarch again.
Hmm.
And it's like implying that she protected the town from this and things like that. And I really liked things like that. So yeah, maybe I guess just let's have
at it.
You love it.
Yeah. Can we give away the big spoiler? Yes.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. And why I think it's obnoxious to compare this to Get Out, but I think, sure, on the other hand, why not? The hunters are the same in both, right? So the hunters in this movie are white people.
Racist white people.
Europeans, from different countries. I don't really know. Maybe.
Yeah, because even though there were like two Brazilian traders among them.
Well, so they were like white Brazilians, right?
Yeah, they were white Brazilians.
So that,
but even the hunters, when I think they said something along those lines, the hunters were like, but you're not white. We're white.
Right.
You're not one of us.
Which I thought was a really powerful, probably, statement there.
Yeah.
And to go along the lines of like, yeah, you are white compared to so-and-so, but at the end of the day, you're still something else. Like as a Brazilian, as a Latino person, you're not.
For sure. And it feeds into the directors say that they wanted to have a film of paradoxes. And that alone is actually embodied in the Saotao. Saotaos are supposed to be like desert regions. But if you remember, this was a very green region. And they were like, it was very much on purpose. It was supposed to be kind of like this leafy Western in a way. And I was like, shit, I didn't even realize that until I just like, these dudes are so smart.
It works so well. I really thought I was looking at every detail of this village just seemed like, oh my God, this looks real.
Yeah. Another thing that they said about the Quilombos that I really liked, and it kind of feeds into this paradox thing, is that the Quilombos themselves, again, they were mountainous villages that were created by runaway slaves when Brazil was being colonized. So the Quilombos are these safe havens where they're kind of isolated, but they're also a symbol of resistance. Mm-hmm. And I was like, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like, again, this is where I feel like the hunter versus hunted metaphor really works well only in this movie, because you feel like there's so much at stake. It feels a little bit more deep than just a chase.
Mm-hmm.
It really feels like they're fighting for their culture in a way.
Yeah.
And there's just so many gaps of like information and violence that happens that really, I think, kind of reflects back on the viewer. Like the child being killed,
it isn't shown on screen, is that
but it's like, you know, there's so much pain, like they experienced pain,
yeah, And they mourn the dead.
Yeah.
It's not just like, okay, we got to get him back.
But you know what's like genius about it is that they never make the townspeople seem less because of it. Like, there's never a moment where, like, even though, say, like, the white people were able to kill a few of them or whatever.
Yeah.
Once it comes head to head, it shows that their the townspeople power was so much greater because of everything that we had seen. Like, that's when, as you said, you really begin to feel grateful that you had 40 minutes kind of exposition, because you really kind of witnessed how things even felt in that town. Because even in that town, there was tension.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah. You weren't really sure what was going to happen.
Yeah. I didn't.
Yeah. Because you've got like drug dealers, yes. Maybe some.
The political people.
Oh, man. The political people. I thought even like the sex workers.
Yes. That was. Oh, my God. Yeah. The sex
Everything
workers.
Everything is
yeah.
so just another layer of this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which when it's a miracle that I don't know how they did it, because then it does get campy when it's, you know, the bad guys are all these evil white people. Because it's a little over top, just like in Get Out.
Yeah.
But it still remains. It keeps all the seriousness and all the importance. And
it almost feels like, I mean, not almost. It feels like two different films merged into one. And we've complained about this before, actually, with another Brazilian film, Good Manners, where we feel like 40 minutes one thing and then the rest of the, and then it kind of like ruins it. But the incredible thing about this film, I agree with you, is once we get the reveal that they're these white supremacists that just want to hunt for fun, it is played to camp, and also the casting of Udo Kier, the main dude, that dude is known for being like the genre bad guy, so
really?
I have so he's like Lars von Trier's favorite dude.
Okay.
So like even that, me as a genre person, I was like, that's even like kind of like a wink.
Yeah.
But as you said, like that whole scene was kind of absurd, but then these two kind of movies have to merge, right?
Yeah.
And then when they merge, none of the characters kind of change. And I mean that in a good way. Like the townspeople are still firmly rooted in their tradition.
Uh-huh.
And the hunters, each of them kind of have a different moral code. Like Udo says that he doesn't kill women.
Uh-huh.
Another one of them is pissed off because one of them killed the kid.
Oh, and he right. Was and like, that was against her moral code.
Exactly.
Kind of
and he was like, well, not against mine.
Yeah. Which I felt was, what did you think of that? Because I think watching, I was like, ah, who cares like what the moral code is? Because it was so campy anyways.
I liked it.
Yeah.
Because the one thing that's actually kind of interesting about this film, and I think that this works for it, whereas with other films, this would bother me. Like in Get Out, we get like the full thesis statement as to why they were doing it, right? But with Baccarat, we kind of never get a definitive answer as to how and why these happen. We just get like these context clues. Like they have a drone that is watching the townspeople. That way the hunters can get off on watching the kills.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that aspect. There's a racial aspect. There's this like psychopath aspect. But we never kind of know how they all found each other or anything, you know?
Yeah, we don't have that backstory.
It kind of doesn't matter.
I guess to answer the question, it probably is necessary in that merging of those two where it kind of at some point feels really campy, but then they kind of give these backstories a little bit more information about the hunters so that it does feel more real.
Yeah.
It's
a very, very interesting way. Like, again, I don't think I've seen a film straight like this before either. And then getting to the kind of like horror elements, the really interesting thing about that is, remember, kind of like our thesis statement, horror is a projection of cultural anxieties. And a lot of people thought that this movie was made as a response to Bolsonaro's election.
Okay.
But this film was written, shot and edited before the dude was even a candidate. So at like 2017, 2016-ish. Okay. And the directors say that it doesn't surprise them that this film resonates more in an era of today,
uh-huh,
because history is cyclical. And like, I think this is just one of the smartest things they said. They said that it kind of almost doesn't matter when it was made because we need to contend with living with the past. Mm-hmm. A lot of people have kind of like a nostalgia, like things are behind us. But they said that this film was very much a response in writing to that past and how things aren't good for everyone in Brazil. And yeah, and really that tension of like class and race and struggle, which is why they wanted to create that fictional town. And there was so much thought given into who would make up this town, what are their rules and whatnot, even down to the very ending, mm-hmm, where they have Udo. You think they actually
Udo?
Yeah, Udo, the main guy.
Okay.
The head guy.
Oh, the head hunter.
Yeah, the head hunter.
Okay.
So they said that originally in the script, they were going to do a war style execution, but they were like, no, that's not how it would be. And then it kind of invites this whole, oh, see, both sides are savages. And they were like,
no, that's
not what we wanted. And so the ending is that they bury him alive instead.
Uh-huh.
And it kind of opens
up in a very like symbolic, ritualistic. Yes. It feels like this is how the town
exactly
has punished murderers for hundreds of years, kind of thing.
And what they said is it also opens up to the fact that this may not be the last time. And to think about it,
that it might happen
it's
again.
It's a jail cell. Uh-huh. That they put him in. Uh-huh. Yeah. And the director said that was very much intentional because, again, this is all about kind of Brazil's history and how, like, there's always this constant threat to the vulnerable, but the vulnerable don't fall victim to it. They are empowered through their culture and their trust in each other, even if it's even, like, contradictory and things. Again, they said, like, this is a film of paradoxes. And I was like, yeah, dudes, you did it.
Dudes, nice. One other last thing I like about it, I think that I need to speak on, is by the end, they could have, as filmmakers, released some of the tension or said, oh, you know, but it's not all white people, or it's not white people's fault, or they could have softened it. But instead, they make a turn into political, and it's like, no, not only was this bad, but this happened because, you know, these white people, these hunters came and were able to hunt because one of the town's politicians, like,
yeah,
maybe from the city,
exactly,
sold him out.
Exactly.
And I love that instead of ending with like a, you know, whatever, tie with a bow, the bad guys lose, whatever. Yeah. It was this like cut of like, and, you know, it was also not just racial, but also political.
Yeah.
Like it just really fleshed it out and made it like, yeah, like F this, F that.
Exactly.
It felt like a rallying cry.
No, you're absolutely right. And I think, again, this comes down to how it's so important to really do your research. Because, like, with What Keeps You Alive, it was just kind of like plugging in things, right? But with Bacurau, they thought of everything mainly because they knew that they weren't from this region. Yes, they're Brazilian and they're very much affected by what's going on, but they're aware that they're white Brazilians and they didn't want to make a white perspective story on the Sertaus. They said that that was a really big fear of theirs. Mm-hmm. And so they worked with the cast, which a lot of them were from Sertaus and Quilombos, to really build this authenticity. Like, you know, the capoeira scene. It's the scene where they're dancing around the fire, mm-hmm, and the John Carpenter songs comes on.
Okay.
That was improvised by the cast.
Yeah.
And the directors were a little worried about it seeming fetishizing.
Okay.
But the cast was like, no, this is kind of like, they convinced him into it.
Yeah.
And he then was kind of convinced into it because this is an indigenous dance done over this like industrial song. And he was like, this was kind of just what the film was about, how the industry was taking care over the wilderness and these communities. And I'm just like, these dudes are so smart. Like, this is just a really smart film.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Props to them. They could have blown it. Because even as I hear you, like us describing it, I'm like, man, this movie could have sucked.
It really
could've. If they didn't have the touch and they didn't do all the, hit all the parts just right,
and then,
this thing could have been a disaster.
Yeah. And then not to even talk to the film's intelligence, even though it's really remarkable, it also, like, as you said, there's just such a great element of camp. Like, you know, there is some pretty shocking gore sometimes, but you know, it never feels like, say, Girls with Balls, where Olivier constantly just wants to fuck with us.
Yeah,
I really don't think these directors wanted to fuck with us. They were just trying to be like, what is necessary for us to show?
Yeah,
because sometimes they didn't show some things. Like the kid's death, they didn't really show that. They showed it from the perspective of the assassin.
But it was enough. Yeah.
It was,
It
was really powerful.
Interestingly, I like the way you put that. Yeah.
Yeah. So really dug Baccarat.
Woo. All right. We got a winner. Yes.
Yeah.
We both gave it a thumbs up.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And
skulls in the air for Horusperia.
Yes, I am pretty sure Baccarat is still available to purchase to support indie theaters. I don't know if it is for DC, probably not anymore, but I did watch it that way.
Okay, good.
So definitely think of checking it, because if anything, I'm really bummed that they weren't able to get the theatrical release that they wanted, because I think this would have been really cool in theater.
It, you know, it's like, how does a movie hit? Because to me, this was just as good. Well, to me, it was, for me, it was more enjoyable than Bong Joon-ho's Parasite, but it kind of could be in the same realm. It's a foreign movie.
Kind of.
It takes on
class structure,
class,
in a way,
race things.
Yeah.
Yeah, so why does one movie get a lot of acclaim and the other one kind of go, ugh. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of that has to do with, like, being established in the industry. But if anything, I really hope that this film, I haven't really seen that many people talking about it.
Yeah.
And that kind of bums me out, because I think that this is probably one of the best films released this year. I'm also very annoyed. Kind of related, that they're considering postponing the Oscars.
Okay.
And I'm like,
because of Corona?
Yeah.
Oh, and because there hasn't been enough movies.
Well, not only that,
okay,
but basically they're saying that, in a way, they're implying that movies that were released on streaming aren't good enough. And I'm just like, man, fuck that.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry. Things like Baccarat should be considered.
Sure,
and
for sure.
There are a lot of movies right now in the pipeline that studios don't want to release because of money and shit. And I'm just kind of like, y'all just need to get fucking over it. Mm-hmm. You know, like, what the, you know, there's a lot of unknowns in this situation. And I just think trying to prioritize profits over escapes right now, like, what else do people have, you know? It's a scary time, but that's why we watch things like Baccarat.
That's why we watch Baccarat.
So
question. Yeah, hunter versus hunter. Oh, I did want to ask you, who do you think would win? Who's the hunter or the hunted that would win, come out on top? Because the hunted,
the lesbian, no.
She
would have been killed immediately by the gay hunters or the white supremacists.
Okay.
So
yeah.
She gets, because she's also just dumb.
She's one person.
She also
she's dumb.
Kills
she killed
really
a
stupidly.
Lot of wives, though. Okay, but here's her, I think her game plan is the woods trick, you know?
Yeah.
Go for a hike.
Oh, yeah.
Push them off. So I think she could probably get one person, but she's up against
she's
hunters, plural.
She's an idiot.
Maybe we just put them against the leaders, the leader of the hunters from the Girls with Balls, and the leader
of the
white supremacists.
Okay, so that would be Dennis Levant, that would be Udo Kier, and that would be the psycho. I think Udo Kier, actually.
From?
Baccarat.
Baccarat.
Yeah, I think so.
It would be a tight matchup.
Mainly because I feel like
they all girls kind of suck in their own ways.
Yeah, but Udo did seem to be the most intelligent, even though obviously old Satanist dude was old Satanist dude, yeah, and things of that nature. But there was a lot of, I mean, again, it also just comes down to the way that these films were fleshed out. Like, I would have loved What Keeps You Alive if I felt like it had taken the time to understand its female psychopath. It didn't. It made her so nonsensical. With Girls with Balls, we knew that there was no thought there. He was like, yeah, I wanted to make them gay because you don't get gay hunter. Literally, Olivier said that. He was like, yeah, I just thought it was funny. But then you get Baccarat with so much intention and you're like, oh, okay, I understand like everyone in this film.
All right, so the ultimate hunters in this case, led by the white supremacist dude.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess I don't want to big up that necessarily.
I mean, we do not big up supremacy.
We will big up the winners, the hunted. No, yes.
Oh, yeah.
The prey.
The hunted ones.
Who were the winners in all occasions.
Baccarat. Okay, I will say Baccarat would kill everyone.
Oh, yeah, you cannot mess with Baccarat.
They were so smart.
Yeah.
That was actually kind of probably one of the most fun things. I didn't kind of expect it to go too smoothly. I was like, oh shit, they're gonna ransack this town, right?
Yeah.
But no, like, they were on them every step of the way.
Do you remember that scene? It was like a greenhouse, like a dude living in like a greenhouse where he just had all these plants and he's walking around and he's misting the plants and he's naked and you can see his wiener.
Yes, I know. That
scene was
crazy.
That was an amazing scene.
Yes, because I thought that they were going to kill him.
Yeah.
And I think it's a couple.
Yes.
They go into the thing.
Uh-huh.
And then we don't see what's in the shed as a viewer.
Yeah.
So we're surprised with the hunters.
Oh my goodness.
They get shot out.
Woo.
And then
Thrilling.
His wife comes around to like then take the girl. And they try to cure her, actually.
Okay.
But she ends up dying or something.
Yeah.
It was just so good.
So good. So full of
so
good, good
really
stuff.
So really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the moral of the story is to watch Baccarat.
Watch Baccarat. Give them all a shot, says Clinton from Horrorsperia.
Yes, indeed. So for our next one, I don't know what we're going to do yet.
Yes.
I think we're going to do a couple of things.
What do you got? What ideas you got percolating?
I definitely want to do a science fiction aliens one.
Yes, you've been wanting to do that for a while.
For like
but
over
not,
a year.
Not like just all the alien movies, right?
No,
not
no,
like
no,
Alien
no.
1 through like, 5, 6.
I want to keep it foreign.
Oh,
so,
perfect.
There's two films. The main two films that we both have seen actually would be District 9 and Attack the Block. But I want to find another one. So,
yeah, let's get out of the Eurozone.
Yeah. So
and the
well,
British,
actually,
the UK zone.
But that's the thing. Okay.
Okay.
Gonna save it for the pod. We're gonna save it for the pod.
Okay, I think I know where you're going.
But there's this very specific reason why that's the case. I want us to revisit Latin America because I re-listened to that pod and that was a pretty good pod.
All right.
We were supposed to do like shitty movies. Remember that one?
Yeah. Well, we talked about it. Here we are talking about Girls with Balls. So it's like, you want us to do that again?
Honestly, I kind of want us to do like the best on Shudder, but they would just take too much time.
Really? I need you to give me some more recommendations because I'm running out.
Yeah.
We could do Best of Shudder sometime.
Yeah. We also want to do the series. So one thing, Reader, that Clinton's super
into. Are you saying
into,
Reader? Are we talking about listeners here?
I'm funny. Anyway, so the thing that Clinton's really obsessed with is Spanish language genre shows. He's like seen them all.
Oh, I would definitely not say that. But I've seen a couple that I really like, that I really, really like.
Yeah.
And then it seems like every other month on Netflix, they're like, whoa, we got another great idea. Okay.
And you watch it.
Well, and then the show is like the native and the conqueror.
Did you watch Green Frontier?
I love Green Frontier. Did you watch it?
It was recommended to me.
By me?
but like someone else
by
recently.
Someone smarter.
No, it was just funny because I was like, someone had told me to watch that before and I don't know who it was.
Oh my God.
It was totally
that's
you.
That's how I feel about every recommendation I've ever given. Someone else gets credit for it. Yeah, that's my favorite. I would watch that again in a heartbeat. I love that one. Maybe. It's like maybe 5-6 episodes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll do, because I also want us to do Kingdom. Maybe
Kingdom,
we'll do series
China,
next.
China? No.
South Korea.
South Korea.
Oh my God.
Not problematic. I was just trying to get into the right region. Okay. South Korea, I've seen that and I liked it. Okay, I know we're running a little long, but sad note.
We're out on,
rest
right.
in peace. On a somber, serious note. You know, I've had a show that I've watched for years now, slowly making my way through one episode at a time, probably 2 years, but it's felt like three or four. It feels like a lifetime of watching Sin Senos No Hay Paraíso,
okay,
which translates to without breasts, breast, there yeah. is no paradise.
Yeah, Colombian, right?
This was a Colombian telenovela yeah. in the early 2000s that just really hit with me and really hit with a lot of people at the time and even today. However, Netflix
canceled it,
took it off.
Yeah,
I was on episode 98, readers. 98. I had 90 more to go for the first season. And they took it off. What am I to do? I can't find it anywhere either. I just assumed, okay, they're gonna take it off, so I'll be able to pay someone else to watch it. I can't pay anyone to watch it. I need help.
I hope that the distributors of that show are listening.
Listen.
We need to start a petition.
There are some people on Twitter who share my...
like three other people?
More like 12. More like 12. Yeah.
Oh my God. So maybe we'll do series. I don't know.
Yeah. Series time. Would be a good one.
Yeah.
But it does take a lot of time to get through the series.
So yeah, that's the thing. Maybe the thing? Second to next. Okay. So I guess I just need to start like watching.
No, just watch. Yeah. Just yeah. watch. Let's do some series. And Aliens. You've been wanting to do Aliens. So let's see.
I have. But okay. Clinton says that he didn't want to do Aliens because he doesn't like either of those two movies.
And to half step that backwards, I think I like Attack the Block. I've seen it a couple times. And maybe the second time I just wasn't into it as much.
Those are two of my favorite movies. So I think that's funny.
I won't say anything else.
No. I think.
Do you think District 9 is one of your favorite movies?
Yeah. Heavily.
Maybe I should rewatch it.
Yeah.
All I remember about that is that they make it look like he's having sex with the alien.
Oh my!
And I think to myself, yeah, that would happen. Like they would do that. Absolutely, that was real.
I feel like you need to rewatch both of those before we do it. No, maybe you don't need to rewatch.
Yeah, I've seen Attack the Block a couple times. Right. Yeah.
Okay, so that's it.
That's it. But we're still talking. We don't want to leave you, listeners. Yeah, so this is going to be another classic sign-off.
Yeah, well, I'm going to make Clinton breakfast now.
Ooh, breakfast for dinner, which yeah. you had a fun name for.
Brinner.
I thought that was good.
Only you would like that.
I thought that was good.
Okay, that's fair.
Save it in the
yeah.
files. The funny files.
The funny files. Now we're doing ASMR.
Yeah, so May's going to cook now.
Okay. I need to find my cat.
But we're not going to turn off the audio equipment. So enjoy the ride.
Bye.